The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1 with Kia Credit. Flexible 142 finance solutions from Kia, home of the 7-year warranty. The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1 with Kia Credit. 142 finance made easy with Kia, home of the 7-year warranty.
Our text number is 51551, our email address john@rte.ie, and we're on Twitter at John Murray Show. Veronica McSweeney is a concert pianist who has played all over the world. She is well used to public performance, but just over 2 years ago, she stopped playing the piano until now, and she's with me now. Veronica, you're very welcome.
Thank you very much, John.
And first of all, tell us a little bit about your life and times, your career, your love of performance.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I started piano when I was just turned 7. And really, by the age of about 11, 12, I had my mind made up. This was what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. And really, from the time I made my debut here, funny enough, the first time I played with the symphony orchestra, I was only 14. And it kind of started from there. And it's like a bug. You know, I just loved playing. I loved getting out and performing for people. And, you know, my studies took me from Dublin across to Salzburg. And then I was studying in London with a very eminent Hungarian pianist, Ilona Kabos. Worked with her for quite some time. And then literally, once you're launched into this crazy world, which I have to say I thoroughly enjoyed. But it's a lonely kind of life, really, as a solo pianist.
Okay.
Because it's not like, you know, you're not touring with a group of people. This is one of the reasons why I loved getting involved in accompaniment work and chamber music as well. Because touring as a solo pianist, all you see are hotel rooms and you're met by... You know, you're met, taken to somewhere, you perform and you're taken to an airport and off you go again. And you're on your own virtually most of the time. So, you know, people think it's a glamorous life. It's not really.
Hmm. And tell us some of the places you've visited.
Well,
at this point,
I was the first Irish artist to play in Russia, for example. Well, not, I wouldn't even say Russia. It was the old USSR. And I was invited to play there. And consequently, I played in the Ukraine and I played in Belarus. I played in Estonia, in Latvia, in Lithuania. And when I went there the first time, it was 1975. So it was still sort of once you went to a place like Russia, I mean, you weren't heard of again until such time as you came out. There was no contact with the outside world.
That must have been fun.
But it was a fascinating experience. I loved the Russian people. I went there with a great, you know, a certain amount of apprehension because, you know, people didn't go to Russia. You didn't go to Russia for your annual holiday. And of course, St. Petersburg was then still Leningrad. And Ian was like going into the great unknown. But they were the warmest people. And the concert halls were magnificent. And the audiences were huge, which was another thing that I, you know, we weren't used to coming from Dublin. OK, you play in the Gaiety Theatre. You've got about 1,200 people. And you go and give a recital in somewhere like Poltava in the Ukraine. Mm. And there are 3,000 people. And it's packed.
Have you ever thought of a memoir, Veronica?
Do you know, so many people have said to me, you must write a book because it's true. I should really before I lose the old marbles altogether.
Well, you're very good recollection anyway of those Eastern European performances.
Yeah, oh, that was fantastic. Of all the places, I mean, I've played in the States a lot as well and parts of Europe, but my Russian experiences, I have to say, will that's definitely top of my list.
Well, amid all your travel and all your busy schedule, you did manage to raise a family as well.
I did, yes. I have a son, Carl, and then I had two daughters, Judy and Aisling, with whom I'm going to play on Friday.
Yeah, because that's one of the reasons, I suppose, Friday is so significant, your return to the piano, because a couple of years ago you decided it was too much for you. Just take us back and explain what happened.
Well, unfortunately, my daughter Judy, who was a brilliant, brilliant young musician, she died of meningitis just 2 years ago. But it was after quite a struggle. She had been ill in 2006 and had very major head surgery. But she recovered, because that was the type of person Judy was. She was a little fighter. She was absolutely fantastic. And within months, she was back doing all the work that she had done before. She was primarily a teacher. She loved her music, but her big... And I remember even at the age of 12, she's saying to me, "Mom, I don't want to do what you do, but I want a life in music." And she always had her mind made up that she wanted to teach. And she most of their education, their music education, was done in the UK, because I went to live in the UK in 1980. And so Judy and Aisling were very young at that stage. So most of their musical education was over there. But I moved back here in 1997. Judy followed me in about 2004.
And why did she want to come home?
Because, I think, because the rest of the family had come back to Ireland. And, you know, she was well settled in the Manchester area. But no, her she made up her mind that she wanted to come back to Ireland, and she did. But, you know, and very brave move, because she was well established in the UK. But coming back here, she really had to start at the bottom rung of the ladder and, you know, start all over again virtually. But it wasn't long before people realised, you know, this girl has something. She was just a born teacher.
And where did she teach?
She was teaching in Alexandra College in Dublin. And they have a very big music department in that college. And she also taught privately. But she also did examining for the Royal Irish Academy of Music. She did a lot of accompanying with choirs, with individual singers, instrumentalists. And she was just a busy, busy, busy girl. Absolutely incredible worker. And but unfortunately, in 2009, this thing hit her again.
And what exactly was it?
What happened with Judy was... Initially, it was like fluid was coming from the brain down her nose. Now, she developed a drip from the nose, which we all thought was just the hangover of a bad cold. But it transpired what was coming down her nose was the cerebral fluid that goes around the brain. And because she was losing fluid, the brain seemingly, we have things called ventricles inside, and the brain knows how much fluid it needs. And the brain started making more fluid. The ventricles became enlarged. And as a result, when they did the big op on Judy in 2006, they had to put a shunt in her head, because she had developed a thing called hydrocephalus or hydrocephalus. I never quite know how they pronounce that word. And it takes away the excess fluid. But the big problem with the shunt is that if it blocks, or if in any way any infection got in, it's straight into the head. And this happened to her in 2009. Air got through some way into the brain. Major surgery yet again. But in 2012, unfortunately, some infection got in, and unfortunately it developed into bacterial meningitis.
And had you feared the worst all along, or did you think she would pull through?
You
mentioned the fact that she was a fighter.
Yeah. Knowing Judy, I thought all the time she would pull through. And even when I found her that particular morning in her house, we weren't getting a reply to a phone call. That's how I found her. And when they took her in, they had to put her into an induced coma. That was the first time that I had a terrible feeling, she's not going to make it this time. And she was actually in a coma for 3 months before she died. This happened in January, and she died in the following April.
And you had to make a decision after a few months of her being in the coma.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how difficult was that?
Oh, it was just hell. Absolute hell. And needless to say, my music went by the board. I mean, any concerts I had planned or whatever, any plans I had, just my only concern from that day in January was Judy. And I was in that hospital every day by her bedside, willing her to come round, you know, and there wasn't the same story every day I went in. There's no change. And it was very, very tough. And consequently, because of my association with, or Judy's association with the music, It was, and many is the time she played in my music room at home. She often took students in my music room at home. The whole association with the room, I couldn't even cross the door. I couldn't even go in there. And if I did sit down and play the piano, within a matter of minutes, I was just like in floods of tears. And there were too many, you know, memories and associations. And I just made up my mind at that point, right, my music is over. I just really don't want to go there.
And was it because every time you tried to play the piano, it just conjured up all sorts of images of,
well, that's
of Judy,
right,
and
yes,
reminded you of,
yeah,
of special moments?
Well, special moments. And, you know, music is it's a very emotional medium. You know, music, you can be very moved, even listening to music, even if you don't have any particular experience like I've had. You could sit and listen to a recital. It has happened to me many times where I've been really moved by listening to somebody perform a certain work. But the whole business of the fact that she was a pianist, she played a lot of the same repertoire that I played. Many's the time I'd be working on something and I would often discuss points of interpretation with Judy. And I could almost, you know, I go into the piano, I could still see her sitting there. You know, and it was just very, very difficult to handle. And I was quite happy in myself. I'd reached a point where really I wasn't missing the music all that much.
You made a decision. You weren't going to play the piano again.
I have a lovely big garden at home. I got launched into my garden. I have my dogs. I have my cats. I had people I wanted to see. I wanted to have time to go and have coffee and not worrying about, oh, I've got to do so much practice today. Mm. And I just got into that role. And it wasn't until, funny enough, an associate of Judy's asked me about last November, what are you up to, Veronica, these days? And I said, nothing. And she said, what do you mean, nothing? I said, I presume you mean with regard to your music. I said, no, I said, that door's closed. And she looked at me and she said, do you think Judy'd be happy about this? And I'd never thought of it that way. And then my daughter Aisling was over with me at Christmas and I told her about this and Aisling said to me, well, she says, Mom, you know, maybe it's time. And then the discussion came about when she said, look, how about we do a concert together? And that's exactly how this concert came up for this coming Friday. But in early January, I said to her, you've got to give me time just to think about this and see how everything works. Mm. And when I went into the music room that morning, I always remember it. I just put on a CD, a favourite pianist. I love to listen to Rubinstein playing Chopin. And I just clicked on one track. I don't know what it was. And I'm over in my little Judy corner, as I call it, in my music room. And this piece played, and I'm not kidding you, it was the weirdest, weirdest feeling. That piece of music was Judy talking to me. And it was like, Mom, I don't know why you're doing this. I'm happy where I am. It was like, it literally felt, and in the piece, funny enough, I'm going to play it on Friday, there are actually then two voices where I felt it was like the mother figure coming through here, but she's still saying, you know, I'm in a happy place, I'm fine, you've got to get back doing what you know you can do. And it's a case
through
of that
piece,
issue. Through this piece, it was, all kind
you.
Of coming to me. Mm. But then in the piece as well, there's this kind of feeling of it's the anger that I went through. I went through a terrible period of angry that this should happen. Why did this girl who's in her prime be taken away? And what she was doing with young people, her students just adored her. Mm. And she had young students, she had adult students. And she just had a wonderful way of communicating and getting the best out of these people. And they loved her for it. She really instilled a love of music in all her students.
And the anger would partly have been the whole notion that a mother was burying her daughter.
Well, that's something, no, I mean, any mother who has lost a child will know exactly what I'm talking about. It's just a horror beyond horrors. You just don't expect to do that, mm-hmm. you know. But she still, the point is now, the difference I feel now is she is with me, and I feel she's.
And was she not with you up to last November? Was she not there?
No. Well, she was there, but she was there as my daughter, not as Judy the musician and the music that really enveloped herself and myself. You know, we were great buddies together as well, not just a mother and daughter. We went to concerts together. We went to lectures together. We discussed things together. And I had the greatest respect for her views as well, because she was a very musically a highly educated young lady.
So you miss her as a friend.
I miss her very much.
Yeah. And she was single.
Yes,
so
she was single.
A special bond there, I suppose.
Absolutely,
the time you spent.
Yeah. And of course, I live in Bray, and she lived down the road in Greystones. So I miss that little red car that I used to see coming up the drive regularly, you know.
And have you been able to, since you got back up on the horse, first of all, has it been difficult?
It was very difficult at first, because physical music, being a musician is a bit like an athlete insofar as you have to keep fit all the time. There's practice is very essential. When I started back last January, dear God, I had not fingers, they were like sausages. They wouldn't do anything for me. And it took a lot of, you know, slogging with the exercises and the Hannon studies and the Chopin etudes and the scales. But I'm quite happy with where I am. I'm not planning to go back into the performing world per se, big time, you know. I've done all that, and, you know, I'm getting a bit long in the tooth now for all that pressure and whatever. But the main thing is I'm back enjoying my music, and I'm starting teaching, which I find I'm really enjoying. And I'm taking on students. I love the I do some examining and adjudication, that kind of work. I just want to be involved in the life of music in Dublin.
In some ways, are you playing to connect with Judy as distinct from
Correct.
Not playing at all?
That's right.
And because of what had happened.
Yes.
And every time you play now,
you feel
her presence.
Yes, and I'm very, very happy there.
Mm.
Because I know she's happy wherever she is.
Mm.
But I know she's there.
And what about the rest of the family? How are they?
Well, my son, of course, is married, living out in Rush. So I have three gorgeous little grandchildren, Sean, Aaron and Caitlin. And Aisling, of course, is with the Scottish Chamber Orchestra. She's based in Edinburgh. And it's absolutely a great thrill for me when we can get together and do some playing, which I'm really looking forward to now on Friday. And we're also giving a concert in Eyre Court the day after in a beautiful little church, Meelic Church, out in Eyre Court. And we're doing a recital there on Saturday. But then she's back to Edinburgh again to get on with her work on the following Monday. But I'm hoping now that Aisling and I will do, because we had a trio going as well. And I'm in a much happier place.
That's good. That's good. Mm-hmm. And you seem to be happy in yourself and to be eagerly awaiting this return. Is it very nerve-wracking?
I'm a little bit. This is funny. You know, I've been doing this kind of thing all my life. But suddenly, because of the gap, and I'm just kind of getting back into it on Friday. There's a certain kind of apprehension there, you know, because I literally did close the door. And now I've kind of gingerly opened it again. And, you know, whenever you put yourself out there in front of an audience, I mean, it's, you know, it's not the easiest place to be. But I think once I get that first little step, and it's lovely to be actually sharing the programme with Aisling. I will be playing some piano solos first of all, and then we're doing Dvorak Sonatina, beautiful work, and some Spanish songs, Manuel de Falla.
And you're going to give us a taste of what's to come on Friday in a moment. I'm just wondering, in the last couple of years since Judy died, have you met other people who have made the connection between music and bereavement? In other words, people who have found it difficult to play or to listen to music as a result of someone close to them dying.
Well, I've never actually spoken to another musician who was in the situation I was in. I have heard people say that they find music a source of comfort. But I don't know, because I was so immersed in music as a profession all my life, And because the association with Judy was so close, I just felt that was the last place I wanted to go. Music would, anything else, get the garden, wonderful. Love my garden. And I really launched into that.
Is the garden neglected now that you're back playing the piano?
Well, it's not getting the same attention as it did this time last year.
Well, but I'm sure for your many fans, they don't mind that at all. And as I say, you're going to play a piece for us now with your daughter, Aisling. Tell us about it.
Well, this is a very beautiful little piece by Fritz Kreisler, who was a great, great Viennese violinist, and he wrote beautiful pieces for the piano and violin. And it's called Liebeslied. And funny enough, I like this piece, and I think apropos of the programme, the conversation we're having today, it's very apt, because Liebeslied is like the sorrow of love, really. I thought initially it was called Liebeslied, but it's not. Liebeslied is about the sorrow of love. And it's this great, obviously, this wonderful love that I had for Judy and she for me. And there's a kind of a sorrow there. And at the same time, there's a beauty there. And it's a memory of things gone past.
Well, we look forward to hearing it now. We let you take your place beside the piano. And just a reminder that recital, Veronica McSweeney and her daughter, Aisling O'Dea, takes place in the John Field Room at 1:05 on Friday next in the National Concert Hall. And any ticket information that you need is at nch.ie. Veronica, it's been a pleasure talking to you, and take good care of yourself.
Thank you very much indeed, John. Thank you.
Text 51551. The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1.